it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, this is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, and I'm glad you could join us for our New Year's celebration podcast of Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. I trust you had an exciting and happy New Year so far. And I'm glad you could join us for this podcast. It's running a little late. You normally do it on a Saturday, but we just had a lot going on, so we couldn't get there. But I'm glad you could join me, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you some of the things that we want to do to wrap up this year. We're going to do a little bit of a different podcast this time than we normally do. Normally, I go over all the different things that have happened. I'd encourage you to go to Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, the blog, which is at thecomputercurmudgeon.com, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Not really that hard. T-H-E, you got that right. Computer, C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R, you can spell that. Now, curmudgeon, okay, I understand. There's some folks that go, huh? C-U-R, a cur is a bad dog, M-U-D, mud, rolling in the mud, G-E-O-N, on the planet Geon. There you go, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Go there and read in the blog all the exciting things that are happening and the strange things that are happening. And you know, we may talk about a few of them if we have time. Now, you may say, if we have time, why wouldn't we have time? Well, the reason is, we've got a few things we want to share with you as we look back on the year 2005 and look forward to the year 2006, which we're now in as I record the podcast. Which, by the way, for those of you that are keeping score, this is Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon podcast number 17 for January 1st, 2006. My. Yeah, it's the first day of the new year. And that's one reason, you know, most people about this time, they start looking back and going, what was 2005 like? Well, it was 12 months long. What can you say? It was a year. And a lot of things happened. But a lot of things happened in the computer world that didn't quite go right. And so, to honor those of you stalwart warriors in the computer world, we've got some It Didn't Go Right celebrations on the podcast, and I trust you'll enjoy them. This first one comes from the Chris Perillo Show. Apparently, Chris wrote a poem expressing his disgust with his computer connection to the internet. It seems that he is a subscriber to Comcast broadband, and their service apparently is not that good. Now, I will say that I am a subscriber to Time Warner Cable broadband, and it really, really, really works well, and I've had very few outages, and I've always been very happy with Time Warner. Hear me, Time Warner? You know, if you want to send me some money, that would be fine. You know, I wouldn't mind that. Anyway, but it's always been great for me, but apparently Chris has had problems, and being the excitable young lad that he is, he wrote a poem about his problems, and somebody took that poem and put it to music as the Comcast Connection Blues. So let's listen to that blues song about connecting to the internet, or shall we say, not connecting to the internet. PodSafe music from Derek K. Miller, the Comcast Connection Blues.
This morning, connection was down. Nothing left to do but to drive all over town. Then I found me a hotspot and I got me online. The waiter offered bread so fresh to compliment my wine. I got the blues. The Comcast Connection Blues.
For every other customer, this downtown isn't news. I think it's back up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's off, never mind, I've gone offline again. I got the blues so bad, the broadband dropping blues. I got a funny kind of feeling that Comcast needs Viagra or something to help it stay up instead of hitting snooze. You know what I'm saying? Does anybody know what I'm saying? Comcast, you know what I'm saying? I said, do you know what I'm saying? Is there anybody out there? Hello? Too far from the office for DSL. Don't bother me now, cause I'm in broadband connection hell. There ain't no email, can't post to my blog. Would someone grab the Drano, cause I got a massive data clog. Silver lining in all of this is I finally have the time to go upstairs and start polishing my shoes. The sooner I'm back on, well, the merrier. We seem to be online. Oh. No carrier. Up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's awesome. Oh, never mind. I've gone offline again. I've gone offline. I've gone offline again. Anybody got a dial-up connection or something? Phone plug? Teletype?
There you go. The Comcast data connection blues. I hope you enjoyed that one. That's the first of our hits for this particular podcast. You know, there's a lot of folks having problems with their internet connection, and I know how that can be because, you know, if you don't have a connection to the internet, then what else is there? You know what I mean? Anyway, now let's talk a little bit about the underlying operating system. There's apparently a site on the web called deadtroll.com, which is odd. And the gentlemen that run that site are also odd. They call themselves Three Dead Trolls. I don't know if they're exactly a singing group or a comedy group or just exactly what they are, but they are very strange individuals. And they have a song called Every OS Sucks. Now, you know, it's a little harsh. And the guy that sings it is apparently a little bit upset, but he apparently comes from my time frame, you know, when we started working with computers in the 70s and have been at it ever since and have gotten a little frustrated. Now, he even has a few negative things to say about Linux. Horrors! I mean, I don't have anything negative to say about Linux. It's never crashed on me, but then again, he does make mention in this little song that you shouldn't need a PhD to get online, and of course, I do have one, so maybe I can't identify with him. Anyway. But the doctor, in the interest of sharing and spreading the joy, wants to share with you his little ditty called Every OS Sucks.
Hi there. Well, you know, going to do a really high production values video for this song. It's going to be pretty cool. We're going to have little emulators and blue screen. It's going to be pretty cool. But, you know, would have taken us a couple of months. And, a man called us up and said that, you know, if we didn't get a video in the next couple of days, we'd lose the gig. Now, you know, we're not one to be pushed around by the man. No way, you know. But we started thinking that artistically, the best thing for this song, really, would be to just do it, you know, live to tape there. You know, I had a microphone, a webcam, and, you know, the DV camera there, and just capture that organic performance in a digital form, you know, and that would sort of work with the theme of the piece. So, you know, that's what we're going to do, because then, you know, this way we get the check. So we're on take 53, been going at it all night, recorded about 20 takes without any audio, that was cool, but I think we're going to get it on this one. I think this is the take. Yeah. You see, I come from a time way back in the 1970s when computers were used for two things. You either go to the moon or play Pong. Nothing in between. You didn't need a fancy operating system to play Pong. And the men and women, well, the men who went to the moon, well, God bless them, they did it with no mouse, you know, and a text-only black and white screen and 32 kilobytes of RAM. Huh. Well, then around the late 1970s, home computers started to do a little more than play Pong. Very little more. Why? Computers started to play non-Pong-like games and balance checkbooks. Hell, you could play Saxon on an Apple II and write a book, all with a computer that had 32 kilobytes of RAM. Yeah, it was enough to go to the moon. It was enough for you. It was a golden time, a time before Windows and bloatware and color. Time before every OS sucked. Well, way back in the olden times, my computer worked for me. I'd laugh and play all night and day on Zork 1, 2, and 3, the Amiga VIC-20 and the Sinclair 2, the TRS-80 and the Apple II. They did what they were supposed to do. Wasn't much, but it was enough. But then Xerox made this prototype. Steve Jobs came on the scene. Red of mice and menus, Windows icons, a trash, and a bitmap screen. Old Stevie said to Xerox, "Boys, turn your heads and cough." When no one was looking, he ripped their interfaces off. Stole every feature that he had seen, put it in a cute box with a tiny little screen. Mac OS 1 ran that machine, only cost $5,000. But it was slow, it was buggy, so they wrote it again, and well, now they're up to OS 10. They'll charge you for the beta, then charge you again, but the Mac OS still sucks. Every OS wastes your time, from the desktop to the lap. Everything since Apple DOS, just a bunch of crap. From Microsoft to Macintosh to Linux, every computer crashes, cause every OS sucks. Well, then Microsoft jumped in the game, copied Apple's interface with an OS named Windows 3.1, and it was twice as lame, but the stock price rose and rose. Then Windows 95, then 98, man, solitaire never ran so great. Every single version came out late, but I guess that's the way it goes. That bloatware will crash and delete your work. NTME, man, none of them work. Bill Gates may be richer than Captain Kirk, but the Windows OS blows and sucks at the same time. I traded in, yeah, right, for what? It's top of the line from the CompuHut. Fridge, stove, and toaster never crash on me. I should be able to get online without a PhD. My phone doesn't take a week to boot it. My TV doesn't crash when I mute it. I miss ASCII text and my floppy drive. I wish VIC-20 was still alive. But it ain't the hardware, man. It's just that every OS sucks. and blows. Now there's Linux, or Linux, I don't know how you say it, or how you install it, or use it, or play it, or where you download it, or what programs run, but Linux or Linux don't look like much fun. However you say it, it's getting great press, though how it survives is anyone's guess. If you ask me, it's a great big mess for elitist, nerdy schmucks. It's free, they say, if you can get it to run. The geeks say, hey, that's half the fun. Yeah, well, I got a girlfriend and things to get done. The Linux OS sucks. I'm sorry to say it, but it does. It sucks. I'm sorry.
Every OS wastes your time from the desktop to the lap. Everything since the abacus, just a bunch of crap. From Microsoft to Macintosh to Linux. Every computer crashes, cause every OS sucks. Every computer crashes, cause every OS sucks.
Well, there you go. Every OS Sucks by Three Dead Trolls. Well, I gotta admit, there have been times that I would have to share his frustration, because particularly with Windows, it seems that there's just never a good end to that. You know, it ends up in a blue screen of death half the time. So, but now as far as Linux goes, you know, I really like Linux, and he was having a hard time pronouncing Linux, so I thought I'd help him with that. By sharing this.
Hello, this is Linus Torvalds, and I pronounce Linux as Linux.
There you go. Now, in case you missed that, that was Linus Torvalds, you know, who, of course, is not, shall we say, American, and so that's why he has a little bit of an accent there. But Linus Torvalds pronounces Linux, Linux. Let's hear that again.
Hello, this is Linus Torvalds, and I pronounce Linux as Linux.
So now, for us Southern American folk, that would be Linux. You know, I know an individual who shall remain nameless, who is the chief information officer of a very large organization that pronounces it Linux. And I never had the heart to tell him that, you know, it's Linux, not Linux. But anyway, to those of you out there who know who I'm talking about, you can smile with the doctor and shake your head and nod and say, yeah, I remember that. Anyway, there we go.
Hello, this is Linus Torvalds, and I pronounce Linux as Linux.
He pronounces Linux as Linux. So the man himself sets us straight. All right, well, there you go. You know, I wanted to share all this excitement with you. Here, as we close the year, we end the year on a happy note. Well, okay, a curmudgeonly note, as we talk about some of these things that have to do with computers. Since we do have a few minutes left in our allotted time, let's look at some of the things that we talked about on the blog. The main thing is again kind of a retrospective. I talked about the first video game, which is Space War, and I do remember very fondly playing Space War on a PDP-11 at NC State University. Matt Shope, a friend of mine back in the day, he and I have known each other since we were 16, and he was working there at NC State University's Computer Center and working on his, at that time, bachelor's in physics, and also later his master's in physics and possibly computer science. Well, that was at UNCG that he worked on his master's in computer science. So, at any rate, Matt went on to work at a major corporation, international corporation, and still does to this day. And hi, Matt. Enjoyed being with you on New Year's Eve, you and your family. But he and I talked about the fact, as a matter of fact, that we both did enjoy playing Space War. Now, Space War, for those of you who don't remember it from the 70s, because it wasn't available commercially, you had to play it on a PDP-11, which was typically a computer that was used either in business or in the academic world, and it was played on a large vector screen, which was usually round, those were thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So literally, computer labs were about the only place you could see this kind of thing, and I'd encourage you to check out my link The Guinness Book of World Records does say that the first version of Space War, released in 1960, is the first video game. So, you know, that brings back memories of playing on a, you know, at the time, especially black and white. It wasn't black and white for us. It was green on green, you know, light green on dark green, vector graphics. But I thought that the Space War game that they developed there at NC State, that Matt and JB and some of the guys developed there, was way better than the one they actually show in the Guinness Book of World Records site that I linked to, because it had a little Enterprise and a little Klingon ship, and they were the ones that fought each other. And even with vector graphics, it was pretty cool looking. So there you go, guys. Remember the day. Yeah. All right, the other thing we talked about on the blog was the sad irony of SCO. SCO is the Santa Cruz operation. And again, back in the day, SCO was one of the very first businesses that really worked with Unix in any, you know, reasonable way. I remember I had SCO Xenix, which, you know, was a Unix derivative or whatever. But over the years, SCO, and I believe I'm right about that. You know, I think Xenix was SCO. If I'm wrong, email me, drbill@thecomputercurmudgeon.com, and say, no, Dr. Bill, shame, 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 you're wrong about that. But at any rate, it's just from memory. I did no research prior to this podcast. At any rate, SCO has become totally evil. As a matter of fact, as I say in the blog, they are even more evil than Microsoft. And you got to go some to be more evil than Microsoft. They are indeed the evil empire. So SCO has stooped to new depths, no longer developing products, no longer innovating, but rather trying to keep their business going because they were failing as a company by litigating, because they at least believe that they own Unix. And since they believe that they own Unix, they have come up with the lie that Linux incorporates part of Unix code. And so they say that they are going to sue everybody that uses Linux. Well, that's like most of the planet. So they hope to keep themselves rich for some time to come just suing people. Well, of course, the Linux community went, yeah, right. You know, Linux is an open source endeavor, and the code is open for anyone to see. If anybody was going to steal code, it would be right there blaringly staring out at you from the code. So, of course, this has been in litigation for years and years and years. And most all the experts agree that SCO doesn't have a leg to stand on and will eventually die a horrible, flaming death, which, of course, being evil, is probably what they deserve. But in the meantime, it is sad, according to this writer who I linked to from my blog, that if they had continued developing good products and if they had continued being a reasonable company, then they might have been a contender in the Linux world today, you know, up against Red Hat. But rather than do that, they chose the dark path. So, you know, there you go. And we all know what happened to Darth Vader now, don't we? All right, so SCO, the sad irony that is SCO. All right, the other thing that it's that I have here is virus poses as a leaked MSN Messenger beta. Basically, there are people out there who are releasing what appears to be an MSN Messenger beta, and everybody's going, I can get this early, and I can be ahead of the pack and run this MSN Messenger beta that no one else has. And it turns out that it's really a virus. You click it, you run it, and boom, you're infected. Okay? So if you're going to IM, don't IM with this particular bogus Microsoft MSN Messenger beta. And actually, I just recommend you don't even use MSN Messenger. You know, it's from Microsoft. I mean, come on, guys. If you're going to have to IM, use Trillion, which is, you know, available for free, Trillion.cc. Go out there and download it, and we'll support MSN and Yahoo and AOL and ICQ and all the other IM systems that are out there that are of any notoriety. And you can do it, and it will be a good thing. So go ahead and use Trillion. And oh, by the way, if you are going to IM and you are going to use even Trillion, you need to download Avast antivirus, because Avast antivirus is one of the few, particularly free, as did I mention, it was free, antiviruses that will check your IM data stream as well as your email and your system and so forth. So, hey, you know, free is good. Trillion is free as well. That is good. If you're going to IM, use good sound clients. And, of course, that would preclude the evil empire. Yes, indeed. All right. Another little item here. Massachusetts CIO resigns over open document controversy. Peter Quinn, who was CIO of Massachusetts, CIO, of course, Chief Information Officer, announced that he will resign effective in January from his post due to the flack that he has gotten for standing up for the open document standard for Massachusetts government. Now, to kind of explain what we're talking about here, most everybody and his brother and sister and cousin and on down the line use Microsoft Office. And that is not an open standard. It is a proprietary closed standard that is, of course, evil. And so most people are using that particular product, and that has become, unfortunately, the de facto standard. Now, what I would recommend is to use OpenOffice, openoffice.org. You can download it for free, F-R-E-E, free, and use that as your office suite. And you can read Microsoft Office documents. You can write Microsoft Office documents, but you can also use the Open Document Standard that is embedded in OpenOffice. And, you know, save your documents to an XML open document standard, which is much better for everyone involved and gets us away from a monopolistic, tyrannical, you know, Microsoft world. But as you might imagine, when the CIO of Massachusetts said, we're throwing out Microsoft and we're going to adopt open document, then people started screaming, and Microsoft started saying that he was out of his mind and all these other kinds of things. And so finally, under tremendous pressure, Peter Quinn, who is responsible for bringing Open Document to the state of Massachusetts, will resign effective January 9th. And he cites the controversy around the decision as well as personal attacks aimed at him as his reason for departure. It's a shame. It looks like Microsoft is winning this battle, and that's really a shame. So, there you go. Next item in the news, women now outnumber men online. I must say this was pretty cool when I found this out. For a long, long time, people have been saying, well, you know, it's been a man's world on the internet. Geeks are mostly men, and that has appeared to be true. But now, it turns out women are the larger percentage online. Now, how does that work? Well, here's how it works. A slightly larger percentage of men than women are online, actually, 68% versus 66%. But the larger population of American women means, since there are more women than there are men, that if you take those percentages, the larger number of actual internet users then would have to be women. So pretty cool. Like I say in the blog, keep it up, ladies. You know, for a long time it's been a man's world on the internet, and now the ladies are out there catching up. Good for you. All right, next item. I'm having to run through them quickly because we had so much time with our PodSafe music earlier. There's been a really bad Windows flaw that was revealed, and it is a doozy. It has to do with the Windows metafile format, and it is bad. And I'm talking so bad that even a fully patched Windows XP system running Service Pack 2 with every kind of protection known to man, antivirus, anti-spyware, everything you can imagine installed on it to protect you isn't going to protect you. This is the bad one that so many people have been concerned about. This thing, it's what makes it so insidious is that it actually uses a built-in feature of Windows that is being used, quote-unquote, correctly because it uses the WMF or Windows Metafile format. If it basically, the bad guys create a vector-based image in this format that has within it code that then becomes executable if you hit it. So all you got to have is an image like this on a given website. If you hit that website, like I said, even if you have Service Pack 2, even if you have a virus scanner, even if you have all kinds of protection on your system, if you hit one of these images, it will execute this code. That's bad. And what to follow up on that, there was another news item. Matter of fact, I'll skip ahead to that one. That very serious Windows Metafile exploit is now being used by adware writers to spread adware. So this is really, really bad. Now, Microsoft knows about the problem, and in their typical fashion, they have been very quiet about it, other than to say that they're going to try to come out with a patch really soon. Now, in this case, I got to admit, you know, it's kind of an awkward situation for them, because it really isn't technically a flaw in the sense that they missed some code like they normally do, or they've got some kind of, you know, buffer overrun issue like they normally have. In this case, it's actually a feature that is built into the operating system that people are taking advantage of. It's been there all along. So, man, you know, Microsoft's going to have to come up with something on this one, because it's a doozy. So watch out for that. You know, how do we know? I don't know. Next item, Star Trek, the Next Generation beat badges. You remember Riker, you know, hitting his little place on his chest, the button there, and going, Riker to bridge. You remember that? And beep, beep. Well, now it turns out that a company, Vocera, has come up with a beep badge for the corporate world. Now imagine you're going down the halls of your particular corporation where you work, and you hear a beep beep, and you hit the badge, and you say, yeah, what do you need? And they start talking to you over the badge. It's a Wi-Fi communication system that works through, in this case, actually, instead of a badge that you wear on your chest, it's a little thing you wear around your neck, like a little, you know, necklace tag thing. But you hit it, and you talk, and you can talk to people. So it's very much like Star Trek. Now, that's really cool, you know, particularly if they'd make it look like a Star Trek badge. I mean, I could get really behind that. So, you know, cool. Let's go for that, guys. At any rate, Microsoft, next item, is talking about the command prompt. What? I thought Vista was all about cool eye candy, and it was going to look really cool, and it was going to have all these transparent effects. And well, it is. That's what Vista's going to be about, for the most part, is eye candy. But they're also including a new command line interface called Monad. And I won't say what that sounds like. Okay, we'll just leave that alone. It's a family show. But at any rate, the return of the command prompt. The new shell will enable a host of new programs known as scripts. You mean like Unix shell scripts? Dude! Yeah. Well, guess what? Unix and Linux have had it for quite some time, as in their entire history. But, you know, okay. Some of you are going to say, yeah, I used to write DOS batch files. That's not the same thing as a shell script, believe me. But at any rate, Monad is going to have this capability. And it's going to be, supposedly, they say, as powerful as Unix shell scripts. So, pretty cool, you know. I'd be kind of interested in seeing that. And if you go to the link there, you'll actually find out that they even have a beta that will run on Windows XP. So, pretty neat. Well, we talked about that adware writers, you know, taking advantage of that Windows Metafile, which was our last item. And we're out of time anyway. We're actually 4 minutes over. So, consider that a little bonus for your new year. As we go into 2006, which I know is going to be a very fulfilling year in the computer world. You know, the economy just keeps getting better and better, and more companies are going to be hiring geeks, and the life of the geek is going to be very much worth living, and it will be a good year. I'd like to make, in closing, a few predictions. Okay, so write this down, January 1st. 2006, Dr. Bill predicts, I predict that Linux will not be the major desktop operating system once again in the year 2006. Yeah, well, easy prediction to make. However, I'll add to that prediction that a lot of IIS organizations are going to be looking at Linux that haven't been, both as an operating system for their servers and as an operating system for their desktops. They're going to just dabble their toes just a little bit in the warm water of the Linux world and see what happens, see if the world ends. And, of course, it won't if they're daring enough to be out on the cutting edge and use Linux as a desktop operating system. Now, I got to admit, the doctor knows it's not quite ready for the typical user. Okay. But you got to start sometime, and you got to start somewhere. So, come on, guys. Let's get out there and at least give it a shot. I mean, come on, it won't hurt. Yeah, that's my major prediction for the year 2006, that more and more companies are going to be looking at Linux, and I certainly trust that it will be so. So until next week, the doctor is out. And you have yourself a very happy new year. And keep that computer connected.